We are halfway into our lectures. So the first two lectures, yeah, I'll try to give you the overview of the landscape of effective field theories, give you some examples that illustrate various features, yeah, and various issues that you encounter in constructing effective field theories. Now I'll change the gear a bit. Yeah, so I'll instead of discussing physics, like examples taken from reality, I will go to a toy model and really beat it to death. Yeah, instead of being superficial as in the previous two lectures, yeah, I'll try to really go through every step of calculation here to explain, yeah, the nuts and bolts, yeah, of and matching and running in the effective field theories. So yeah, so this lecture will have a little bit different character than the previous two. But yeah, so if you're a student, especially if you're a student who wants to really learn this issues, yeah, this inner workings of EFT, so I encourage you to go maybe later through this example and do repeat the calculation yourself. There's the lecture notes, yeah, that were attached to the first lecture, which actually covered this lecture very 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 well. So this is the lecture about the effective model. So what I will do, I will write a simple toy model without any connection to reality that has only two degrees of freedom. One of them will be light and one of them will be heavy. And then we will integrate out the heavy degree of freedom and study Wilson coefficients in the effective theory for the light one. So I think the goal is to demonstrate, yeah, the quantitative level and, yeah, the concepts of matching, running, reparametrization, invariant basis, naturalness. You actually see that there is a lot of general features of EFTs. Yeah, can be found in this very very simple example. So the settings is the following. So this is the toy model. It has a light scalar field, real light scalar field phi, and the heavy scalar field h. So this is the kinetic terms for the light and the heavy scalar field. This is the mass m light and big M for the heavy scalar. And we introduce some interactions, not the most general interaction that you could write down here, but just the ones that will be most interesting from the EFT point of view. So there is a quartic self-interaction of a light scalar. There is a cubic interaction between the light scalar and the heavy guy. And then there's a quartic interaction between the light scalar and the heavy guy. So the goal is as usual, so that nothing has changed. Yeah, what we want to do is we want to construct an effective theory which will approximate the amplitudes in this toy model where you have two degrees of freedom. Well, in effective theory, we will want to approximate the same amplitudes with just one degree of freedom. And of course, the amplitudes for the scattering amplitudes for the light scalar in the heavy theory have to be approximated by the scattering amplitudes for the light scalar in the effective theory. And again, as usual, yeah, we will try to match this two sets of amplitudes up to some order in the expansion in the heavy mass M and up to some order in the loop expansion. So the novelty of this lecture will be that I will go through this loop part in more detail than before, and some very very important features arise, yeah, at the one loop level that I want to discuss. So going to the next slide. So the EFT Lagrangian. First step is always we want to write down the most general EFT Lagrangian for the light degree of freedom, and we want to organize it in the expansion, the effective field theory expansion, which is the expansion in 1/2 the heavy mass scale. So the effective field theory will contain a kinetic and mass term for the light scalar, of course. Then the most general interactions that I can write is to write a quartic interaction with some Wilson coefficient. This bidimensional analysis, it doesn't have any scale. Then the sextic or heck techno, six point interaction of a scalar suppressed by the square of the heavy mass scale. And I will stop the effective I will stop this AFT expansion at 1/m². We'll never go beyond 1/m², so I don't have to write any more terms. So first thing is that I didn't write any terms with the odd number of fields, no phi cube, no phi five, even though this would be come at the earlier order in the EFT expansion. Why? The reason is that the UV theory contains the Z2 symmetry. So if you look at the Lagrangian of the UV theory, there is the phi field, the light field always comes in squares. So it has a Z2 symmetry. Therefore, the effective theory has to inherit that Z2 symmetry. Therefore, there cannot be any interactions with the odd number of the light field in the effective theory. That's the trivial thing. Less trivial thing is that naively, I could write many, many more operators at dimension 6. I only wrote one, and I say that this is the most general Lagrangian. But you cannot easily counter that. Yeah, that what about, for example, box phi squared? Yeah, so this would also have dimension 6. Yeah, so we have dimension 2 for the box, dimension 1 for the scalar squared is dimension 6. Other terms with a different distribution of the derivatives, yeah, phi box phi cube, or phi squared box phi squared, or phi squared dmu phi dmu phi. All of these terms are perfectly legal terms in the EFT, so why they are not written down here? The reason is that they are redundant. They are redundant because they can be expressed by the operators already present in the EFT Lagrangian. If they are redundant, that means that there is no point writing them because all the physics is already captured with these operators, and there is no point complicating your life by adding operators that don't introduce any additional physics phenomena. Why they are redundant? So let's start with the simplest cases. Yeah. So I wrote this. Of course, you can write probably several more of these operators in dimension 6. Yeah. I just wrote a few to demonstrate the various features. So first, very, very simple thing. Yeah, you can use the Leibniz rule or an integration by parts to get rid of the some of these operators that are written here. So first take the last one here, phi squared dmu phi dmu phi. So now we can take one of the derivatives to the left, and either it hits phi squared and it will produce minus 2 phi dmu phi dmu phi phi, or it will hit this derivative, it will produce phi cube box phi. It means that so this is the same term as this, so I can pull it on the, oops, not pull too hard, pull it on the left hand side, and then I get that phi squared dmu phi dmu phi is equal to minus 1/3 phi cube box phi. So this, by integration by parts and using the Leibniz rule, I can express this operator by this operator. So already this two are not independent. Yeah, this one is redundant, and we forget about it. The similar story is that we can do with this phi squared box phi squared operator. We can take one of the derivatives that make this box. Oh, it's actually this we can do. Yeah, box dmu phi. Sorry. I took the one of the derivatives and integrated by parts. Yeah. So I think I lost a minus sign here in the process. So sorry for that. Yeah. But okay. Let's forget about this example. But the example goes like this. But there is a there should be adding a minus sign. So this I think this result must be corrected. Anyway, so the next thing is to use the next trick that we can use to reduce the number of operators is to use the equations of motion. The equation of motion for the scalar field will be this: box phi is equal to minus m squared phi minus c4 phi cubed over 6, and then there will be 5 to the power of 5 over m squared here. However, I will not take this into account when doing this operations. Why? Because I will be doing this transformations on the operators which are already of dimensions 6. So it means that they are already separated by 1 over m squared. So if I take into account this other 1 over m squared, that will correspond to 1 over m to the fourth term. So these are the dimension 8 terms that we already we are neglecting in this game. Okay, so how can we use this equation of motion to get rid of the sum of the operators? Very simple. Yeah, so we take this operator, O6 twiddle, we go to we replace the box phi, yeah, with this expression, so minus m squared phi minus c4 over 6 phi cube. So we can replace this operator phi cube box phi with minus m squared phi to the fourth minus c4 over 6 phi to the 6. So there is this operator phi to the fourth is already in the Lagrangian here. This operator phi to the 6 is already in the Lagrangian here. So this operator can be traded for the terms that are already present in the Lagrangian. And by the same token, you can do the you can get rid of this operator box phi squared. Box phi squared is we use the same equation of motion, we square it, and we get we again trade box phi squared into phi squared phi to the fourth and phi to the sixth term, and we got rid of this operator. So by this kind of operations, you can show that every operator that I can write in addition to this dimension 6 operator can be traded for the terms that are already present in the Lagrangian. You might ask the question, why am I allowed to use equations of motions? And sometimes you think about equations of motions as something classical. So this is a very important point. If you can get rid of something using equations of motion, you can show that you can also get rid of it by a field redefinition. If something is proportional to the equations of motions in the Lagrangian, then it can be removed from the Lagrangian by a field redefinition. And field redefinitions, they cannot change physics of the theory. So if something vanishes by equations of motions, it can be redefined away from the Lagrangian. So that's why we are allowed to use equations of motion to simplify the effective Lagrangian. Okay, so we will work in this effective Lagrangian with something that I will refer to as the unboxed basis, because we got rid of all the operators with derivatives, so we only have higher dimension 6 operator without any derivatives. However, you could trade this, using the same equation that we just derived, you could trade, for example, this operator for operator phi cube box phi. Yeah, so we have this equation, yeah, between the that we just derived in the previous slide, yeah, that phi cube box phi is minus m squared phi to the fourth minus c over 6 phi phi 6. Therefore, we can solve it for phi 6 and express phi 6 by phi cube box phi and by phi to the fourth. So plugging this back into the Lagrangian, so we could actually trade this operator for, instead of using operator phi to the 6, we could just as well use the operator phi cube box phi. This is a concept of a basis. So we could have many ways. We could write we could span the dimension 6, the space of dimension 6 operators in this Lagrangian. We could use representation without the derivatives or with derivatives. These two, you can find that they are connected by a map. There is a map between the Wilson coefficients in these two bases. So here, if we use this basis, yeah, if we wanna go to this basis, we have to use this map between the Wilson coefficients to connect the parameters in these two Lagrangians. So we can, for example, do all the calculations either in this basis or in this basis, and then at the end of the day, we can use the map to go to translate the results from one basis to another. And we could do even more, yeah, we could also go to double box basis, yeah, and do the same, yeah, again, we can trade this operator for this operator, and again, we obtain an equivalent theory with parameters, where the parameters in the two representations will be related by this map. So this is something very, 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 very easy. So you have to think about effective field theories. Okay, should I say Fayez or Faye?
It's Fayez. Question. This is essentially what you have in the Smith thing with the Warsaw basis and other bases.
Exactly. Right. So this, what I call here unbox basis, yeah, would be something akin of a Warsaw basis in the SMEF, and what I call box basis would be akin of something like the Silch basis in the SMEF. Yeah, so this is again two equivalent descriptions. Of course, yeah, this is the way I'm using this toy model example, because it's shows certain interesting features, yeah, or relevant features of the EFTs. But you see, in the SMEFT, the basis has 2,499 operators. Here, the basis is one dimensional, so it's a bit simpler to explain, yeah, this going from one basis to the other in this very simple example. There was another question I saw.
Yes, it's maybe naive. When you do this change of basis and you also change the mass term, yes, apex and things, is this relevant here? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's relevant in a sense that if you want to translate the result from one basis to another, you have to take into account this transformation of a mass. That the mass parameter will be different, yeah, in the two. Yeah, so if you want to translate from one to the other, yeah, you have to use this I mean, you have to take into account this transformation of the mass. It doesn't mean that the mass is different. I mean, the mass is the one that you observe in experiment, yeah, but how the mass depends on the parameters of the theory is different, yeah. So that's the key point here. Yeah, so this basis is a bit funny, yeah, because you have this higher derivative operator, yeah, in the sort of like higher derivative kinetic term, yeah. So that's why this funny thing with the mass, that the mass in the Lagrangian is not the real physical mass. That's how this arises. Okay, so from now on, so we have this galaxies, yeah, of basis, yeah. Here there will be just one dimensional. For now on, I will work in the unbox basis, so the simplest basis. Also, you'll see that in a moment that this other basis will come back to bite me. So it's not that I can completely forget about the existence of other bases. Please, there is a question from Arman.
Yes, sorry. So, Adam, can you maybe just go back one slide? So, since we discussed this about the masses, so now I don't understand quite. So, if we, for example, take some experiment and, for example, put some limits on, let's say, m hat squared. Mm-hmm. I mean, since it's a physical parameter, shouldn't the...
No. So the physical parameter, physical mass would be different than m hat in this case. Yeah. So in the unbox basis is the simplest. So the physical mass at the tree level, yeah, would be m. In the unbox, in the double box basis, yeah, the physical mass, yeah, would be would not be equal to m hat.
All right, thank you.
Okay, one more thing. I will go back to this H-bar counting, yeah, here, before we do the, we start with the matching. The remember the rule, yeah, that if we have an interaction with n fields and whatever number of derivatives, we can assign the power of H bar to this Wilson coefficient according to this rule. So in the UV theory, the H bar powers of the couplings is lambda zero has H bar minus one, lambda one has H bar minus one half, because there are three fields here, and lambda two again has H bar minus one. In the EFT, C4 has H bar minus one, and C6 has h bar minus 2. Yeah, so again, I'm using just this equation here with n equals 6. So if we know that the matching equation, they have to have a form of something like that. If you're at tree level, then C4 has to be proportional to lambda zero because they have the same powers of h bar, but then it has to be proportional to lambda one squared because lambda one has h bar minus 1/2. So we have to always match the powers of h bar. And similarly for C6, C6 can be proportional to either lambda, to some linear combination of lambda zero squared and lambda one fourth and lambda zero one lambda one squared. So of course, for the quartic, maybe this is completely trivial, yeah. But if you go to higher loops and if you don't want to get lost, I think the h-bar counting is always a very useful guide, yeah. What you are expected to find, yeah. And then when you calculate some result, you can always check if you didn't make any stupid mistake by checking if the h-bar powers agree on both sides, yeah. And similarly, we can find what is the expected form of the matching equation, yeah. For at one loop and so on. Okay, so let's start with the matching. So the first thing is we want to match at tree level the amplitudes for the scattering of 2-2-2 scattering of the light field. So we want the same amplitude to be obtained in the UV and in the EFT theory. So in the UV theory, we have one contribution to this process from this quartic self-interactions, and this is this. And then we have contribution also from the exchange of the heavy field between the two light fields. And then there will be three such diagrams, yeah, because you always have to, I mean, the phis are indistinguishable, so you have to add the cross diagrams. So this is S channel, this is T channel, this is U channel. So the full amplitude is the sum of this contribution from the contact self-interaction, and then the three contributions from the H exchange. So now, next step is we want to expand this in powers of one over m squared. So in the first approximation, yeah, so we take, if you forget about ST and U, so that there will be this m squared terms dominate, that will have three identical terms. So we'll have three lambda one squared m squared over m squared. So we will get this term in the first approximation. So this, it's not only that we have the quartic interaction here, but we also have a contribution from this cubic interaction squared, yeah, that arises here. And it comes also with a factor of three because of the three channels. However, we want to go further. This is only one over or m to the power of zero. We want also keep track of the contributions of m to the power of minus 1/2, of minus two, sorry, one over m2 contribution. So we have to expand it, these terms, one step further. And then just again, it's a geometric series. So you will have, from this, you will get s over m squared, from this, you will get t over m squared, and from this, you get u over m squared. However, S plus T plus U, there is, you know, this rule, yeah, that this is equal to the sum of the masses, which is four times M squared here. So we can replace S plus T plus U by four M squared. And finally, we're getting that up to corrections of order one over M squared, this process of 2-2-2-5-5 scattering is given by this formula. So it has contribution from this coupling squared, and then another contribution from this coupling squared separated by additional power of m squared. This is the result in the UV theory. In the EFT, here I repeat the UV result. In the EFT, it's much simpler because there's only one diagram. There's nothing you can exchange in between. So the EFT amplitude is minus c to the 4. We want these two to be equal, and we obtain the matching equation that C4 is equal to lambda zero minus three lambda one squared minus four lambda one squared ml squared over m squared. So this is already something, this is quite simple calculation, but you see that there is, it's not completely trivial, yeah, that the quartic coupling, quartic self-interactions in the EFT is not equal to the quartic self-interaction of the light field in the UV. It contains all these contributions that have to be taken into account if you want to write the low energy EFT theory correctly. So we have to, we should continue this, because so far we only matched C4. We know nothing about C6. So to match C6, we would have to calculate the 2 to 4 amplitudes on both sides. But that is, of course, very difficult and pesky. And so instead of, in practice, you all will always use rather the trick with the equations of motion. Yeah? So you solve the equations of motion for H in the UV theory. You plug it back into the equation. You plug it back into the original Lagrangian. Here's the result. And then you're getting, again, as in the Fermi EFT example, you will get some non-local Lagrangian, which then you can expand in powers of derivatives to obtain local Lagrangian. And this is what you get from this procedure. So we have, again, the EFT will have a kinetic term, quartic term, and cyclic term, and then something with the derivative. So I only keep terms with 1 over m squared. So you see that actually this is the moment where the EFT is coming to bite us. So the different bases are coming to bite us. Because from this procedure, what I want to do, I want to match with the EFT Lagrangian, which is in this unboxed basis. However, my integrating out of the heavy field using this procedure of equation of motion actually produced me something that has redundant terms, yeah? So that has both phi to the sixth term and phi squared box phi squared terms. It means that I have to trade this redundant operator for the 5-6 before I can do the matching, because otherwise I cannot just compare this 5-6 here and 5-6 here. Yeah? I have to first trade away this phi squared box phi squared. So I eliminate this one, and you can use this equation. I'll check if this is correct, because I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, but I will check after the lectures. Yeah, if there is no sign mistake here. So we can use this equation using the equations of motion and integration by parts. We trade this term for phi to the 4 and phi to the 6. And we, at the end of the day, we get Lagrangian that is already put back into the unboxed basis and I got rid of all the boxed terms. And then you see that there is Martin, but you have a lot of echo, so you should try to maybe... turn the volume down.
We were trying to raise your hand, but we don't know how this works. Can I ask you a question? The equation of motion trick, when can you use it? Because I know you cannot use it in...
Really? I think you can use it always when you want to obtain the three-level effective Lagrangian.
So it's only for three-level effective?
Yeah. Beyond one loop, there are still path integral methods, which are, however, a little bit more complicated. You have to calculate certain determinants, which there is more work to do. It is still a very nice tool, but it's more complicated than just solving equations of motions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so this is the result for after all these calculations. Yeah, I have integrating out the heavy field by using equations of motion will give me this form of the Lagrangian with the light field with phi to the sixth and phi to the fourth after getting rid of all the redundant Lagrangian. After all the redundant operators. And I have to match it to this Lagrangian in the unboxed basis. So, of course, now everything is clear. We have that C4 has to be equal to this, and C6 has to be equal to that. And we have our map. Okay, the masses are the same. So we have the map between the EFT and the UV theory up to order 1 over m squared that has this form. So this result for C4 we already got a moment ago by using the amplitude calculation. C6 we just got now. This is the new result that was obtained from this calculation. And Christoph, you have a question. I cannot hear you, Christoph.
Yes, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, now.
This is just a formal question about C4. In C4, you have this ML, the light mass. Would you rather take this term out and define it as a dimension 6 operator?
So, yeah, you could trade it, yeah, for a dimension 6 operator, or you could keep this keep track of this formally one over m squared term inside the C4. I think that both options are correct. So you see how this m squared appeared? It appeared from trading s plus t plus u for a m squared. If you instead trade it for some higher dimensional operators, yeah, it's also an option. However, I think it will be much, much more difficult to do it this way, because then you have to deal with this redundant operators at the dimension 6 level. So I'm not sure if this would be a better way. I mean, maybe we can discuss it later if there is a nicer way to do it. But I think that this is completely consistent way of keeping track. So I keep track of terms of up to 1 over m squared. And they 1 over m squared appears explicitly both in the operators and in the Wilson coefficients.
Yeah, it's more a puristic point of view, because the ML is formally light, so I would not expect it to be in the Wilson coefficient, but it is also a parameter of the full theory. So mm-hmm. then maybe you should replace it by the small m squared using your first...
Okay. Sorry. You mean that... No, but I do have, yeah. So m squared is equal to ml squared, yeah. So yeah, we can always replace it by the mass, yes.
Okay, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So m squared and ml squared at this order, yeah, they are the same. I'm only keeping these names, yeah, different, because at one loop level, of course, they will do this distinction will be important, yeah. But yeah, of course, at this point, yeah, I could just replace it with m squared.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so one last comment is that you see, I just wrote before the h-bar counting estimates how this map should look like. And you see that it looks very similar. Yeah, so indeed we have something times lambda zero and then something times lambda one squared. Yeah, so h-bar counting works, but also one warning is it doesn't always give you all, it doesn't give you all selection rules. So for example, dependence of C4 on lambda 2 would be consistent with h-bar counting, but it doesn't occur in this map. And so h-bar counting allows you to maybe quickly check, yeah, that this result makes sense, yeah, but it doesn't give you all selection rules for this matching. Okay, so this is the story so far. Yeah, so this is we finished the tree-level matching at the right there. We have a UV Lagrangian with these interactions. We have an EFT with these interactions. And the map between the parameters, yeah, of the two theories is the one given here. And this map is true up to 1 over m to the fourth terms, which are we neglected, and up to one loop terms, which we are going to calculate in the following. Is there some questions before I go to one loop? If not, let me jump into one loop calculation. So what now? So now we want to do some, we want to require more. We want to require the amplitudes in the two theories to be equal at the one loop level, up to corrections of order 1 over n to the fourth, of course. Okay. So we have, this is the Lagrangian in the EFT, nothing has changed. In the EFT so we'll start our matching with the matching of the two-point function in the two theories. The two-point function, so this correction to the, so this is basically the correction to the mass of the light field in the EFT. And this is a particularly simple in the EFT because there is only this quartic interaction that contributes. You close the loop, you're getting a contribution proportional to this Wilson coefficient C4. This is the propagator of the light field. You integrate over. I mean, in the old days, you had to maybe learn how to do this integration, but now you just, there's Mathematica packages that do it for you without thinking, and this is the result that you get. So there is a we use the dimensional regularization, and there is a pole in 1 over epsilon. There is a logarithm of this arbitrary scale mu that has to be introduced for this regularization over the light mass m squared, and then there is this remnant plus one. So I will be using the dimensional regularization in all of the following, and this is very convenient in the EFT context, because dimensional regularization doesn't introduce any scales. So if you use some scale dependent regularization of the integrals, there would be a new mass scale that you would have to keep track of. You should always get the same result independently of a regularization, but using something else than dimensional regularization will vastly complicate your calculation and will make it more difficult to keep track of the power counting. So we will just use dimensional regularization, and we will use MS bar renormalization. So I will always drop this 1/ε poles, yeah, because they will be not relevant for any in the following. The physical mass in this EFT at one loop level will be given by this expression. So we have a three-level mass, and then we have minus C4 m squared and this logarithm, yeah, where I drop the 1/ε. I could keep this 1/ε, but of course, but that wouldn't change anything, yeah, in the so this is again, there was a question, yeah, about this dependence on the mass of the measured mass on the parameters in the Lagrangian. But this is also the case in this basis. At the end of the day, at one loop, your mass that you're measuring in the experiment will not be the same as the mass parameter here. It will be mass corrected by some expression that is in fact regularization dependent. So one thing that we can immediately calculate from this result is, because the physical mass is that cannot depend on arbitrary parameter mu that we just introduced. Therefore, the derivative with respect to mu of this physical mass has to be zero. And we immediately obtain the renormalization group equation for the mass parameter m squared. So this has to be zero, the left-hand side, derivative of the left-hand side has to be zero. So derivative of this has to be equal to the derivative coefficient, yeah, of this log. So we are obtained the dimensional, so the renormalization group equation for the mass parameter of this, and then we can solve it. And I'll come back to this very soon. Now, going back to matching, in the UV theory, the situation is a little bit more complicated, because we have more interactions and more diagrams contributing to the mass of the light field. So we will have this contribution that is very similar as the one in the EFT. But then there will be, for example, from this interaction, yeah, we will get a similar diagram, but with the heavy field in the loop. And moreover, we will also get the tadpole diagrams with H going like this. And then we also get this kind of sunset diagrams. So this takes a little bit of time, this calculation. Of course, you don't have to do it by hand, because Mathematica will do it for you. But yeah, you have to still type all these integrals into and get the result. And you get, so for example, the first diagram is exactly the same as, not exactly the same as in the EFT. However, except that the quartic coupling that is multiplying this diagram is different. Yeah, before it was in the EFT, it's C4, now it's lambda zero, because that's the quartic here. And they are not the same, yeah, because we found them in the matching that already at tree level, they are not the same. This one interesting thing that we'll be discussing in a moment is that these two diagrams, they show quadratic sensitivity to the heavy mass scale. Yeah, and this is the precursor to the hierarchy problem. I will again discuss it in a moment. So all in all, if you take into just sum all these four diagrams, yeah, and tidy up the expression and drop this 1/ε poles, the physical mass calculated in the UV theory is given by this expression. Yeah, so it's a little bit more complicated. Yeah, it's not only just this term with the log, but then there is some another, there's a log with the mu squared over m squared. Yeah, this comes from this second and the fourth diagram here, and then there is some finite terms, yeah, that are proportional, some proportional to the heavy mass scale, some are proportional to the light mass scale. So let us summarize the situation. Yeah, we have a EFT theory with this Lagrangian where the parameters are C4 and C6. C6 is not relevant for this calculation. C4 is relevant. And we have a UV theory with these parameters, lambda 0, lambda 1, and lambda 2. And we calculated the physical mass on both sides of the theory, on the EFD and the UV. And we expanded, yeah, we didn't have to do actually an expansion here because it was already in the form that was ready to use, I think. Yeah, I don't remember if I did any expansion, I think. Anyway, so this contains only terms up to 1 over m squared. So we have to compare this to expression and find the values of m squared and c for it. So there is something actually not completely trivial in this too. If you look at this first line in the UV, it's the second line in the UV equation, and this term in the EFT, they're actually the same, exactly the same. So we have here, we have this log mu squared over m squared plus one. Here we have log mu squared over ml squared, but ml at tree level is equal to m squared. And this term is already one loop. So we only have to keep track of the matching. So we don't have to look at the corrections, one loop corrections in this term, because we are only interested in the tree level matching between those, because any one loop corrections will correspond to two loop corrections. So this is the same. And then this term in front, here we have a C4, here we have this combination of the parameters. But tree-level matching already told us that C4 is equal to this combination, lambda 0 minus 3 lambda squared minus 4 m squared over m squared lambda 1 squared. So this part of the matching automatically comes outright as soon as we match after we already matched the quartic coupling at tree level. So this is mathematically non-trivial, because you see that there is in this case in the EFT, this comes from only this diagram, and in the case of the UV theory, this actually comes from all these diagrams. So however, physically it has to be so, because this is the infrared part of this process. So it is dominated it depends on the light masses, so we can call it an infrared part. And infrared physics has to be the same in both EFT and in the UV theory. So automatically we got this agreement between the infrared part of the contribution to the mass, to the physical mass. Now, but the rest of is non-trivial, because we have these additional terms on the UV side, and we have basically nothing in the EFT. The only thing we have to make these things equal is to make to require that m squared is equal to this. So what we have to do is that we have to, in order for these two expressions to be equal, that I repeat that this part is automatically equal, we have to match m squared to this expression, and the result is here that m squared has to be given by ml squared minus this expression with this two. With this log, and then with this finite part, and this gives us the one loop matching of the one loop parameters. I mean, of the parameters in the two theories at the one loop level. So now, if you look at this expression, here this depends on the arbitrary. I'll come back to you in a moment. This depends on this expression of at arbitrary scale mu. However, we can simplify the matching by a lot if we set mu equals to m, because the whole term will vanish. And then if we do the matching at the scale mu equals m, then the matching equation becomes much simpler. So this is what we usually do in the EFTs. We do the matching at the renormalization scale equal to the or close to the mass scale of the heavy theory, because it simplifies the matching equation both at the algebraic level, but also at the qualitative level. Yeah, because we get rid of this logarithms that could be dangerous otherwise. So, Fayez, can you? What was your question?
You just answered it.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Good. So this is a thing that we'll see in many examples. Yeah, you can make the matching at any scale. The matching is the simplest at this if you match at the scale at the heavy mass scale. So what we have to do now then, yeah, is the following. So the procedure now emerges. Yeah, we match the parameters of the two theories at the scale m, and then we use the renormalization group equation that I derived in flight a few slides ago, which can be solved very simply to in the one loop approximation, and this allows us to derive the m squared, the value of the parameter m squared at any scale below mu. And this is quite an important tool that we have here at our disposal, because in the original expression, we had if you look at this expression, yeah, for the mass at the arbitrary scale, we have this logarithms. And these logarithms become very, very very large. If, for example, mass of the light scalar is several orders of magnitude below the mass of the heavy scalar. So this large logarithms might disrupt our perturbation theory. On the other hand, if we match at the scale m, this logarithm doesn't appear. And then if we run using randomizing group equation, this logarithm is effectively resummed into this expression. So sort of we reorganize the perturbation theory to get rid of the all the large logarithms by using this procedure. Of course, this is a little bit sloppy what I'm saying here, because except for the large logarithms, we also have this large mass parameters in this expressions, yeah, which I'm sliding upon a bit, but this will become much more sharper in a second when we come to matching of the four-point function. Finally, I want to take notice of one important point that appeared here. The matching. So this is the matching equation again between the mass parameter in the law in the EFT. And the mass and the in general the mass and the other parameters in the UV theory, and it contains this m squared, which is this large mass. So this is the modern view. This is how you can define in a modern way the hierarchy problem. Sometimes you learn in school or you read in newspapers, yeah, that the hierarchy problem is the dependence of the scalar or Higgs mass on the cutoff of the theory. But of course, this way of putting it doesn't make any sense, because physics cannot depend on regularization procedure. And if you, for example, use dimensional regularization, you will never have any dependence on the cutoff. So it must be something different that is the essence of the hierarchy problem. And here you see it. Even if you have a masses of the scalars are vastly different in the UV theory, then if you integrate out the heavy field, yeah, then the masses of the two scalars will mix, and it's unnatural to have a much lighter scalar in the EFT. So once you integrate out the heavy scalar, you expect naturally that the mass of your light scalar is of the order of the mass of the heavy scalar divided by the loop factor. You can avoid these conclusions by fine-tuning, by saying that at the order that we are working on, there is a cancellation between this term, which is arbitrary, of course, and this term. And if you make this cancellation very, very precise, then you can get a light scalar on the EFT side. Note that you have to do this fine-tuning. Once you do this fine-tuning, it's actually the rest of the story is consistent, because then the running of the mass parameters in the effective theory will be proportional to this mass. So once you fine-tune it, the masses at the large scale, then the mass will remain small parameter at all the scales below. So the theory, after the fine-tuning, will be a consistent theory and natural. The only unnatural thing that is happening is at the matching scale. So this is how we understand the hierarchy problem now. The hierarchy problem is that if there is some new physics at the heavy scale and we integrate it out, then we would expect, barring the fine-tuning, that the mass of the Higgs boson is of the same order as the mass of the heavy scale particles, eventually suppressed by a loop factor. So this is how we would formulate the hierarchy problem in a modern way. Note that this is maybe one quirk of this formulation is that if there is no hierarchy problem, if the theory is fundamental, if the standard model is fundamental all the way to, for some reason that we don't understand, it's a fundamental theory all the way up to arbitrary high scales, and then there is never any new physics that enters at any scale, then there is no hierarchy problem. But that's entering into more philosophical discussion. Okay, last 5 minutes, probably 5 plus 3, but I promise that not much more. I want to discuss the EFT calculation of matching between the C6 coupling in the EFT and the parameters in the UV Lagrangian. So now for that we have to calculate the scattering of phi phi to phi phi at one loop level, and in the EFT calculation we will have the contribution from the quartic. And then we'll have also the contribution. So these are the contributions from this, the first three. And then we'll have a contribution from this C6 that will enter here, because we can close the two of the particles into a loop, and that will give us this part. So the expression, if you calculate this expression, for the two scattering in the EFT will be given by this formula. But again, we get some poles, some loops. Yeah, so this is a tree-level part. This comes from this two terms. They come from these first three diagrams. They are proportional to C4 squared. And this term comes from the C6 diagram. And then the F is some function of masses and momenta that is given by this complicated expression. Once again, quick digression. Yeah, once we have this expression, we can immediately demand that this amplitude is independent of the renormalization scale, and then we obtain the renormalization group equation for the C4. And on the right hand side, we'll get C4 squared. So from, because there is this log here, and C6. So again, there will be a renormalization group equation for the Wilson coefficient C4 that will allow us to connect a C4 at a high scale with C4 at any scale well below the big N. So in the UV theory, the calculation is even more complicated. Yeah, then there is more diagrams. So I did on the flight, I did a simplification. I just set lambda 1 to 0 so as to reduce the number of diagrams and make the expressions a little bit shorter so that they can fit into a slide. So before I was keeping this additional interaction phi h squared, now I set it to 0 just to make things simpler. And then I evaluate these diagrams and I get this expression, which is the same function f enters something once with the light mass and once with the heavy mass. And then we have this contributions from these two lines that are given by this expression and by this expression. So one last thing I have to do, I have to expand it. So this is some function of the heavy mass scale m. We have to expand it to 1 over m squared, and we obtain, all of the remnants of all these functions f with the heavy mass scale is this m squared over m squared term here. Okay, so to summarize the situation in the four-point level is that with this EFT Lagrangian, we're getting this EFT, this sort of this four-point amplitude, three-level contribution, and the one-loop contribution. And with this UV theory, we're getting this four-point function for the light scalar field with this terms. And again, once again, you see that this first line, which is the infrared contribution of this loops, comes from the infrared contributions of these loops, is equal automatically. So it's very, very good that it's equal, yeah, because it would be, otherwise it would be very difficult to do the matching. But because it's equal, so we don't have to worry about this this part at all. Final, in this approximation, C6 equals to zero, so we don't have to worry about it either, because I set, remember that I set lambda one to zero, and C6 was proportional to lambda one, so that also simplifies on the EFT side. And we have already the matching equation between the masses, yeah, so which is also much simplified if you set lambda one to zero. So now I have to write down equality between this and this. This, I repeat, matches automatically. And I set already, I already learned the lesson. So I set mu equals to m to make the matching as simple as possible. And then I find that at the scale mu equals to m, C4 is equal to lambda zero. That was the tree level result. And the one loop correction to this result comes from this part that goes like m squared over m squared. So all in all, I found again the matching equation, but now for the quartic coupling. And let me say it again, once we have this matching equations at the high scale m, we can always go to a low scale by virtue of renormalization group equations, and we can obtain the same parameters at a lower scale, which will be relevant for calculating processes at lower scales. So I will end with the very important comment here that you might often think, yeah, but EFT is some approximation. The UV theory is something fundamental, so it's better, and EFT is an approximation, so it's necessarily something worse. However, for calculations of processes that happen at low scale, much below the scale of the mass scale of the heavy particle in the UV theory, EFT is actually superior. So for practical calculation. Why is that so? So if you look at the expression for the four-point function, for this phi-phi scattering in the UV theory, it contains these two logs, log mu squared over m squared and log mu squared over big m squared. So now if you, whatever you do, whatever mu you choose, one, if there is a big hierarchy between small m and big m, one of these logs might get very large. So you say, you can maybe this hierarchy is even 10 to 15. So then this log is 15, and then it can cancel basically this one loop factor. So even if you start with a perturbative theory, with lambda zero and lambda two being perturbative couplings, this logs can invalidate your perturbation theory in the presence of a large hierarchy in the UV theory. On the other hand, if you do the same calculation in the EFT, this is the expression this is the expression for at arbitrary scale mu, but once you resum, take consider mu at the low scale, all these logs get resummed into this running C4M. There is no more large log couplings. I mean, all the large logs are hidden in this C4, and they are resummed up to the running coupling via the randomization group equations. So this problem that plagues the UV theory in the presence of a large hierarchies is absent in the EFT. So the stability of the perturbation theory will be much better than in the full theory, because of this resummation of the large logs. And I believe that this story is extremely important, and maybe you will hear something. It's very important in practice, for example, in flavor physics and so on. So you will hear it probably all over again, this story of the large logs and the resummation. Okay, so this is the end of the example. I said it's in the notes. You can go through it and check all the calculation yourself and make sure that all the steps are clear. So this is a general lesson. Yeah, that when we obtain a EFT from a UV theory, we have to write down the most general Lagrangian, calculate the same amplitude as in the UV theory, and match this amplitude to some given order in the 1 over lambda expansion, and this matching will fix the Wilson coefficients in the EFT. And once you do that, when you do the matching at a high scale, where the high scale corresponds to the mass scale of the particles that are integrated out from the UV theory, then you have to run down the Wilson coefficients to a low scale, which scale is more appropriate for calculations at low energies, at mass scale, much below the heavy mass scale, or by scattering, when you have your characteristic energy of the process is much below the heavy mass scale. So this algorithm, basically in this form, you can apply to not only to this toy model, but to many theories that are of phenomenological interest. Yeah, and then that will pop up in your research. So I think that is all for now, for today. And thank you.
Thank you, Adam. So we have other questions? Yes.
Actually, I have two questions. The first is related to the hierarchy problem, the modern view with effective field theory. So if I understand it correctly, if we say that there's no new physics, say there's no quantum gravity, no gut scale, then essentially there's no hierarchy problem, because instead of integrating from zero to infinity, I essentially just subtract the divergence with a counter term, and that would be acceptable.
Yeah, that would correct? Be so. There is you cannot formulate in a sensible way hierarchy problem in a fundamental theory. I think is the statement. Yeah. So this is something that is considered very, very unlikely. Yeah, that there is no other threshold. Yeah, where we integrate out heavy particles. We believe that, for example, at the quantum gravity scale, there will be some string states. Yeah, that provide the threshold that you have to integrate out. Yeah, and that will contribute to the mass of the light scalar. So this is not a really solution to the hierarchy problem. Yeah, but it's just like the more philosophical idea to entertain. If standard model were fundamental, then the hierarchy problem would be absent.
And the second question would be, if you were working with any UV theory that essentially you don't know, and say it's a gauge theory, is it sound to write an effective field theory that breaks gauge invariance if you assume that the UV respects it?
No, I think so. Okay, so I don't want to maybe bombard you with modern views, yeah, but okay, so gauge invariance is something that doesn't really exist, yeah, but that's a different story. But so gauge invariance, if we understand, gauge invariance is means that you have a massless particle in the spectrum. So if you have a massless particle in the spectrum, if you should have it on both sides, yeah, of the matching equation, so both in the UV and the EFT. So the gauge invariance should not be violated, yeah, by this matching. On the other hand, I think that your question maybe refers to something, some spontaneously broken gauge symmetry, which is a different story. And I actually will allude a little bit to this story in the last lecture when I talk about SMETH, when I will discuss the question of linearly non-linearly realized electroweak symmetry in the EFT. So, but this is a bit longer story, more complicated, and there is a lot of interesting physics in it.
Okay.
Was that your question? I mean, was that
Yeah. Essentially, it was about spontaneously broken.
Okay. So I will talk a little bit about it on Friday.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other question?